You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com. I'm your host, Peter Andrews. It is just after 7 p.m. on the East Coast, and we are here to bring you a recap of last weekend's Ivy basketball action, and I'm really excited that we have such a robust panel of experts this week to take us through this, the final On the Vine of the Obama era. We've got Mike Toney, the editor-in-chief of IvyHoopsOnline.com. Mike, how's it going?
Good. Let me start off by saying I will never make a flush brown down joke on the podcast again after what happened last weekend. That's what I get.
And Mike, enjoying his just desserts for that. Well, we're joined by the toothless tiger self, George Clark. George, how are you?
Very fine. Thank you, and good evening, gentlemen.
Good of George to not be in a bathroom this week. We are joined by Ivy Hoops Online writer making his first appearance on the Vine. We're excited to have Richard Kent with us. Richard, how's it going?
Great. How are you doing?
I think we're all wonderful. And our last special guest this week, he writes for NYC Buckets, where he does a great weekly recap of the Ivy League, lots of charts and dunks and stuff. It's Kevin Whitaker. Kevin, how are you?
Doing well, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we got a lot of people today, so let's get right to it. Let's start with an interesting weekend of the Ivy League. The favorites largely did what they were supposed to do. We can talk about whether or not Penn was ever a favorite, but not much victory for that. But let's start with Yale versus Princeton. There's also discussion on Twitter about whether or not this game means as much now that the tournament doesn't exist anymore. Two of the teams who were expected to vie for the one seed and the regular season title, Princeton coming out on top in this one. Let's start with George, who I assume was at Jadwin for this one. What did you see in this game that you liked from the Princeton side?
I saw a lot that I liked from Princeton. What impressed me most was the intensity that both squads demonstrated right from the start. Nobody on either team had the idea or the attitude that this game didn't mean too much because of the tournament coming up. I think I commented on site that this game had all the intensity of going back to some of the really great wars between Penn and Princeton in the last century. Princeton played very well. I was pleased to note Kevin noted that the first half was the best basketball that Princeton had played all year. I agree with that, even though we only scored 24 points. We limited Penn last week to 17 in the first half. Brown actually scored a few more, but we held Yale to 22. These kids are really playing great defense. And over the long haul, I think that factor is going to work very much to the advantage of Princeton, because you can play defense every night. If you have a couple kids who can't put the ball in the basket, as happened against Yale in the first half, the defense is going to keep you in most ball games. It was just a great night. And the personnel who are making the difference for Princeton in the Ivy League season, Miles Stevens is playing as well as anyone. And Amir Bell, who struggled in the beginning of the season after starting every game for 2.5 years, has really found himself. He's had three double-figure nights in the Ivy League games. And the kids are set up well to go on the toughest road trip. They play five games in 8 days starting on February 3rd at Dartmouth. That'll be a very, very difficult stretch. If they come out of that stretch 3-2 or 4-1, I think Princeton will be certainly favored at that point to finish no worse than second in the league. I have, it strikes me as entirely possible that three teams could end up 12-2. And I just wonder, I asked Robin Harris, who attended the Yale game the other night, the executive director of the Ivy League, how the league is going to resolve ties as far as seeding is concerned. She said it's a very complicated formula. She didn't want to describe it to me for fear of not getting it right. I don't know what the formula is, but I think that could very well happen, that two or more teams will be tied in the top four, and they'll have to resort to some kind of a tiebreaker. I think that might be unfortunate, but that's what we're left with.
We appreciate your executive reporting. Kev, Richard, do you know more?
Yeah, I do. The Yale women's coach discussed that with me before the season started. And I know the last option, unfortunately, is a coin toss. And I know the first option is head-to-head. I can't fill in the middle right now, but I can at least give you those two. I believe there's five options, and I've just given you option one and five. But I'd like to comment, if I could, on a few of the comments that were just made.
Yeah, go for it.
I did Yale radio for the game, and I had a good friend of mine, Gary Walters, on as my halftime guest. And he felt that both teams, Princeton and Yale, played incredible perimeter defense in the first half. And I don't think it was as much poor shooting as it was, and I agree with what was just said, really strong perimeter defense and incredible intensity. I've been following Ivy League basketball since Bill Bradley did battles with Rick Kaminsky at Payne Whitney, and I've always wondered in my mind, is it better to play Princeton second or first on a weekend? And I get the feeling that maybe Princeton playing its second game, since Princeton takes so many threes, playing its second game in 2 days might not have the legs that it had in the first game. And number two, the flip side is it may require more to defend and get out in the perimeter on the second day. So that's juxtaposed against, you know, perhaps a detriment in shooting, maybe a little bit of a detriment on defense. I think that's a really interesting issue and topic to explore at some point in time. But getting to the game itself, I felt, and I picked Princeton to win the game. I actually seeded all 14 of Yale's games going into the game, and I had Princeton as the most difficult game to win at about 28%. And certainly, I didn't know that Anthony Dowyer was not going to play until about 20 minutes before the game was to start. And I think, assuming Dowyer plays and assuming we have the same cast of characters in New Haven in February, I think the game will have a different complexion, because I think Dowyer is very much a leader and right now is probably the only true point guard that Yale has.
Just to fill in some details, Dallin Cuff reported more on the tiebreakers this weekend from the Ivy office. So the first tiebreaker is head-to-head. The second is you sort of go down the list of all the rest of the teams and who has the best record against the best team, the second-best team, etc. If it was 12-2, a three-way tie, neither of those would all be washes. And so the third tiebreaker is actually an average of ratings indexes, and he didn't know which ones they are, so he sort of have to speculate on who that would favor, and it's not
sorry,
entirely
Kevin,
clear.
You say yep. Average of ratings? Are you talking
so this
about
would be like RPI, KenPom, I don't know, BPI, maybe. I don't know exactly what's in there, but I think right now Princeton is a slight lead, probably Princeton, then Yale, then Harvard on some of those. Those early season losses would hurt Harvard, but by the end of the season, I think they're close enough that it could still possibly change. But personally, I don't think all three teams are going 12-2. I think looking at the youth of Harvard and Yale and some of the lack of depth that all three teams have, I think at least someone's going to get tripped up and play multiple teams. But we'll see.
Richard, is there something going on in the background of your call?
Not at my house, no. But right. I hear a weird noise on the Skype. It's almost like water running.
That may have been one of my dogs taking a drink.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Well, the noise has disappeared.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that.
I will say one thing.
Yeah, George.
Peter, with respect to the tiebreaker, Richard was right in that the women, the ultimate tiebreaker for the women is a coin flip. But Ms. Harris suggested to me that the men's coaches just refused to allow a coin flip to resolve a tiebreaker. So there's
it seems to me that if one of the rankings is if truly it's like an average of KenPom, BPI, all those sorts of things, the likelihood that those would also result in a draw is so slim, especially when you consider the different non-conference. I mean, I kind of like that as a way of getting the non-conference schedule. It has a little bit of meaning if you get down to it, where you're basically saying, like, okay, this team gets credit for playing tough opponents. So that's interesting stuff, and I certainly, as we get more games in the books, we'll see whether or not that's an actual possibility. So Kevin and Mike, who haven't talked so much about the game yet, did you have any other observations from the Yale-Princeton game on Saturday night?
Yeah, this is George mentioned. I thought it was the first half was Princeton's best half of the season. They were running their offense, at least for the most part, caught Yale backdoor a couple times, and the three-point shooting, I think they were 1-for-15 in that first half, but there were open shots. I think I counted 4 that went, you know, halfway down and popped out. You give them a few of those, they could have easily had a double-digit lead. But Yale was without Anthony Dallier. They were without Mieoni for part of the game with foul trouble. And so it's a different team if they have everybody there. And so I think that rematch is going to be quite a game.
Yeah, and I think if you're a Princeton fan, you have to be pleased with the emphatic finishes that Princeton is ending games with, as opposed to the non-conference slate when you had games that seemed to kind of fall in the other direction, like the VCU and Lehigh losses, and kind of a trend of maybe faltering a bit late in games. And when you put together the wins over Penn and Yale, to see how they just kind of found another gear and finished teams off, you know, even if those are at Jadwin, that's still a really crucial thing to be able to do, and they've proven that they can do it. One side note, it's really fun to just watch Miles Stevens, just watch him play the floor at both ends. He's just a really kind of, I don't know, joyful comes to mind as a word to watch the way he plays. Even when he's playing Penn, it's still fun for me to watch what he does. He's an excellent defender. Devin Kennedy, to compare the two, and this is starting to get a little abstract, but that's okay. That's what the show's for. Kennedy almost is, his shot is so fluid and flawless, it's almost not fair to watch, but Miles Stevens really is one of the best players, one of the hardest workers. He really works hard with his footwork, you can tell, at both ends, and he's just a delight. And I hope that he gets the accolades at the end of the season that he deserves.
I have a question and a comment. I watched very intently the Princeton-Monmouth game. I actually watched all the Princeton games that I could watch. And where did the Princeton team go that ran and ran and ran against Monmouth?
I think part of that is, and Monmouth tends to do that sort of thing, they push the pace of that game. But that's a really good point. I think our Ray Kern writes for NYC Buckets was one of the first I saw to notice that Princeton's really slowed things down over the past few games. You can look back, they've been 65 possessions or below pretty much since that Monmouth game. And you can, maybe part of that is their lack of depth. Maybe part of that is, with the two injuries, maybe part of that is getting back to running their offense more, which they're doing to some degree. I don't have a great answer on that, but I do think that's a good point.
And a comment. I think, and this is not even as a Yale partisan or from a Yale perspective, I think that one needs to notice the unbelievable improvement of Alex Copeland. Copeland, and I've got some insight into that because Bart Williams, who was the point guard, the lefty point guard on the Butch Graves Yale teams in the early 80s, is his godfather. And I spoke to him over the summer, and he told me that Alex was taking 1,000 jump shots a day out in California. And he had absolutely no idea, obviously, that Mekhi Mason was going to get injured in the BU secret scrimmage and that he would be called upon to be the, you know, the focus of the offense. But he is just, you know, he might be seeing 8 minutes a game if Mekhi was playing right now. And he has really stepped up. He's not Mekhi. He hasn't stepped fully into his shoes, but he's doing the best impersonation that I could possibly imagine.
Richard, I was joined at the game by a good friend of mine who was a high school coach for many years, and he is retired, and he enjoys going down to Princeton with me as often as he can. He said to me at one point in the second half, you know, that Copeland gives you the attitude that he thinks he can score anytime he wants to. And I absolutely had the same feeling. Zach Rosen took Princeton apart in the Palestra one night. Had just a phenomenal night, and Copeland had that same vibe at Jadwin on Saturday. He's a real good player,
which raises, you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but with Mekhi, Copeland, Oney, and Bruner next year, I mean, without injuries, that is one heck of, I'm not going to say one heck of an Ivy League team, I'm going to say one heck of a national team.
You'll get no argument from me. Bruner was very impressive, and he didn't start, but he was he's a real talent, and so is the other freshman, Oney.
Well, the Oney game against Washington, if you look at the statistics and the amount of time that he had the ball in his hands, and he had never played a game before, and Washington was picked preseason number 3 in the Pac-12, I mean, it was just an unbelievable performance. I think 24 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists.
Quite a debut.
Yeah, so let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about, so Princeton played 2 games last weekend. The second one was against Brown. And Brown, I think many people, myself included, you'd say really when the surprise of the weekend, because not only did they held it pretty tight against Princeton, but they went into the Palestra the next night and really did a number on Penn, damaging their hopes of making the tournament and making the Brown Bears a bit of a dark horse to sneak in. So let's I'll start with Kevin, if he doesn't mind. What is it that Brown did last weekend that you thought was particularly either successful or that they've been doing well?
So the thing that Brown does is they make you outscore them. Brown's offense is good. They can score on anybody. And so they play a lot of games up there that are high scoring. You can't really just count on them to beat themselves. You have to go out and get buckets and beat them that way. That's not really Penn's MO. Penn has been a defensive team this year. They aren't really the type of team to go out and just match you score for score. And so when Brown's defense is not good, that's why they're, you know, not one of the better teams in the league, even with that offense. But when they match up against a team like Penn went through a little slump in the first half, and then just throughout the rest of the game couldn't really make that up. And so you saw them playing from behind the whole game, and then since Brown's offense can score and was getting a lot of mismatches, Penn just could never close that gap.
Yeah, so Mike,
Interested to ask Mike, what do you think about Penn's lineups in that game? There were a few things that have felt like hadn't seen first half, some of the bench wings playing together, in the second half some AJ and Max playing together. I feel like Donahue he's been trying a lot of things. I wonder what you thought of them, especially in that Brown game.
Yeah, I mean, you have to try. I mean, it's coming to the point now, and from a broader perspective, you look at the makeup of this roster. Steve Donahue, and we all know this, wants to either get buckets at the rim, or he wants to shoot threes. He doesn't want to do anything in between in two-point jumper land, as Ivy Twitter is wont to point out. So he's brought in a couple of transfers, Caleb Wood and Matt McDonald, whose reputations are very three-pointer-oriented. And, you know, you've got Jackson Donahue on the team coming into the season. You've got Sam Jones. You know, I really thought that this was, you know, going to be a kind of an inside-out kind of offense with Broder, you know, and these three-point shooters helping each other, essentially. And it, only one of those has happened. I mean, Broder has held up his end of the bargain for the most part, but the three-point shooting just hasn't been there. And when it's not there, I think it's, to put it really simply, as far as the roster combinations or lineup combinations, I should say, you've got to try something. You can't keep doing the same thing. I was happy with what he did in the Brown game because, I mean, you know, you can't score 52 points and, you know, 60 points. You know, as they did in their first two games. And I don't think the offensive performance against Brown was even that impressive either, you know, especially in a with more possessions in that game. You know, you've got to try something. I think that Penn, you know, maybe they're at a point now, and they've been slow, playing at a slower pace. Maybe they should, you know, try to get things going. Watching the Yale game in particular, they seemed to benefit when they got out in transition more, especially during the long dry spells that they had in that game. And every team is different. You know, you're not going to have that kind of size disadvantage if you're Penn in every game. But, you know, you have to be able to compete against an offense like Brown. You have to, you know, be able to, you know, keep up with that pace and find the lineup that's going to work. And, you know, if you have to mismatch or mix and match a few wings to do that, then, you know, that's got to be the MO. But it's not going to matter if you keep shooting in the 20s in three-point percentage. That's not going to get it done. No matter who you're playing, or no matter how good your defense is, you know, you're not going to give yourself a chance. If you keep, actually the free throw shooting got it better against Brown, but, that's because of who was at the line, really. If the free throw shooting with your principles isn't good and your 3-point shooting, isn't good, for the personnel that you, brought to the team to do just that, then you're going to struggle.
I think that's right. And, you know, look, I love Steve Donahue's system. I think most of us think the threes and inside are the way to go, but Darnell Foreman's a career 25% shooter from three. Matt McDonald, 33. Matt Howard, 31. They just don't really have the shooting to make that work really well yet. And so what you're seeing teams do, I think I posted a screenshot from the Yale game where five players were inside the paint when A.J. Broder was posting up. He's going to see a lot more of that. And I think it's going to be a struggle for him as teams get scouting him and Penn to keep it up through this freshman season.
Yeah, that was a fantastic screenshot because it shows so many things. It shows where Brodeur's development is right now. It shows where the shooter's development right now is. It shows how adept of a coach James Jones is to deploy that kind of defense. You know, it shows Yale's defense itself. I mean, not just Jones, but you know, you've got to give credit to the players that are actually on the court for their positioning. You know, that kind of spoke to where both teams are. Just that one screenshot picture is worth a thousand words. And yeah, you're going to see more of that. And it's not always going to be a team with the defensive acumen and the size as Yale. But if you want to be an upper tier Ivy squad, then, you know, hey, you know, you've got to make teams pay for that.
I thought that Penn's 3-point shooting was certainly prevalent in the near comeback against Princeton. And I also had the benefit of seeing Penn against Fairfield after Fairfield had dismantled Boston College at Mohegan Sun. And I thought Penn's inside-outside game was very much present in that game.
I want to ask, I realize that talk a little bit about Penn here. I do want to ask the panel, George, Richard, Kevin, everyone. Brown, bit of a surprise that they were able to knock off Penn. Is there a sense that they might be able to sneak into the back of this Ivy race, or is this sort of an aberrant result? Is their defense, their defensive woes ultimately too much for them to overcome?
My pick going into the weekend for the fourth spot was Penn, and my pick right now is Columbia. I think Columbia had an upgrade in coaches from Kyle Smith to Jim Ingles this year. I'm a big Jim Ingles guy, and Petrasek seems to be playing quite well. I don't think that Columbia was well coached last year, especially with the talent that they had. I think they had as much talent, if not more, than anybody. And this year, I just think they're playing more as a team. I don't see Brown as the fourth team. I see Brown on a level of Penn, maybe tying for fifth, and I see Columbia as the fourth team.
Yeah, my mind goes back to last year around this time. Cornell swept a series at Dartmouth and Harvard. I think we were all talking a lot about how surprising they were, how they were a dark horse, how they were maybe the fourth best team in the league at that point, and they went out and lost the next nine games, I think. So I'm wary of overreacting early in the season. Brown isn't going to be fun for anyone to play. You certainly can't take that game off just because that offense is so good, but I think the top three of the league are just going to outscore them. I think Columbia, if it plays well, should handle both those games. I think Brown's going to struggle with even some of the other teams near the bottom of the league, so they're going to play some good games. They'll be fun to watch, and they certainly have a chance of sneaking into that top four, especially with that big road win already. But I agree that Columbia, and I'd probably still have Penn ahead of them at this point.
Yeah, how I mean, if we're go ahead, Richard.
How significant do you think the schedule nuance is this year, which I think happens every 6 years with the Princeton exam schedule, that we had the Yale-Princeton-Penn weekend before the Yale weekend back-to-back games with Brown?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's that significant, really. I mean, but that's just my attitude, is just play the games when they are, and you know, it's not as if there was a lingering injury that was, well, you can argue that the Dowyer thing with the not necessarily an injury per se, but no, I mean, I think that, you know, it depends on which team you're taking the perspective of. If you're Yale, you're a younger team, you know, maybe you want to play Princeton later than that weekend. But I guess it's a good point. I don't know that it is a huge factor.
Well, we talked about how the tournament keeps everyone's hope alive longer than ever before. Penn, nevertheless, is right on the cusp, because their next game is at Harvard and then at Dartmouth. So they could very well start the season 0-4. That would be very, very difficult to overcome. Columbia, with Petrasek, I would have to say, I agree with Richard, I think Columbia is pretty much the favorite to grab the fourth spot. I will say this about Brown. I will echo what Pete Carril said on Friday night. He opined that Brown would be a tough matchup up at their place for Princeton. He saw a lot of things that he really liked on that team. They didn't have the best night, and our kids were just – Devin Kennedy was otherworldly that night. That's a tough trip for Princeton, so – certainly can't rule Brown out. They did what they needed to do on this trip. They split.
Well, certainly Pete Carril's opinions are one entitled to a certain amount of deference. There's no question about that. Let's talk a little about the Columbia-Cornell game, because we sort of danced around that a little bit. You know, Kevin talks about overreacting to a single result. I don't know what he's talking about. I booked my ticket to the Ivy League championship the second the buzzer rang. No, it was a good... a heartening performance by Columbia in a couple respects, and I'll touch on some things I noticed before kicking it out to the panel as the resident Columbia head here. No question, Petrosic's offensive play was outstanding, over 30 points, Ivy League co-player of the week. The trick with Petrosic has always been that he plays a little bit small for a guy who's 6'10", but he does have a killer stroke from, you know, he hits the three, he shoots well inside, he's a 90% free throw shooter, and Cornell just did not have any answers for him. The way to beat Petrosic is to get him in foul trouble on the defensive end, and Columbia did a good job. They've done a better job sorting out their front court. I think a lot of that actually comes with inserting Rodney Hunter into the starting lineup, which was forced by injury, but he's been getting increased minutes in recent years. Hunter's a sophomore who missed all of last year with a redshirt injury, and I think he brings a real good defensive intensity. He has a smart sense of when to pressure. He's very tenacious. The offensive game hasn't really come on for him yet. And then on top of that, the play of Mike Smith, which I've touched on before. Smith won Rookie of the Week this week. The dude really triggers the Columbia offense in a way that we haven't necessarily seen since, I mean, maybe Brian Barber. One of the things about Mullins and Lowe, who were both great players and great scorers, I'm not sure either of them was ever perfectly comfortable as, you know, the one, as a pure point guard. Lowe, certainly a driving kind of player. Mullins loved to spot up. I don't know. I think Smith does bring a real edge to this team that I like. And I'm interested in, I guess I'll start by asking Richard, your observation that Jim Engels has done a good job coaching this team. What is it that you think he's done so far that you like?
Well, we got to talk about this team, you know, as opposed to last year's team, because last year's team needed two basketballs. This year's team only needs one basketball. I mean, with Mado Lowe and Alex Rosenberg and Grant Mullins, and I mean, Grant Mullins, I don't know how much you've watched him at Cal. He's just phenomenal at Cal. And Petrosic, I mean, it was very difficult. So I think the job is easier right now because you have fewer offensive threats, and you don't have Lowe hogging the ball, and I don't say that in a derisive way as much as last year, but I think Jim Engels is a real preparation guy. His NJIT teams pulled some phenomenal upsets. He's very defensive minded as well, and I think he's gotten the learning curve for not only Columbia and the Ivies down pretty quickly.
Kevin and others, thoughts on Columbia so far?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting you say that because Kyle Smith had, I think, especially among non-Columbia fans, a very good reputation as a coach. I think fans of your team always find something to criticize as a coach. I've been struck sort of by the difference between Engels and Smith. Smith was very keen on shot selection, getting back to that threes and at the rim approach I had before. Engels, you can tell, is much looser, playing at a faster pace, but also taking a lot of shots that the non-conference especially, it was clear they would not have been taking last year.
Well, I'll add specifically, just to interrupt, but I, in talking with people close to the Columbia program, it is a big difference that Kyle Smith was a stats guy, so to speak, and Engels is very much not a stats guy. You know, he clearly has a high understanding of basketball concepts, but if you talk about concepts like, you know, you have X pace, adjusted this, you know, shot selection, that's not so much part of his philosophy.
Well, when you're talking about, I mean, I went to 5 Columbia games last year, and I talked to a bunch of people very close to the program. And, I mean, does anybody disagree with me that last year's Columbia team underachieved? Forgetting the postseason for a second. I'm talking about during the Ivy season.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, Prince and Neil were both really, really good teams last year. I didn't expect Columbia to go perfect against the bottom half of the league. I thought that was actually quite impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially when you look at, you know, part of the thing with Columbia is I'm always evaluating it versus the historical context. And when you look at the history of Columbia, they have not had a team that good in a generation. And maybe you figure out a way to make it, you know, maybe the personnel doesn't sync up perfectly. They never did quite get the front court worked out. But, you know, you're trying to beat Justin Sears and Mekhi Mason. And, I mean, I thought that Yale team was also incredibly well coached. Princeton, Columbia never quite figured out how to topple them. And, you know, let's be real here. Columbia probably could have beaten Princeton in at least one of those games were it not for demon magic involved. Columbia cleaned up the lower half of the league. And I don't think you can take the CIT run out of it. That showed a real, you know, some of those games were against patsies. But UC Irvine was no slouch. They came through. Look, I mean, I think you can at times take offense at what Kyle Smith did on the court, not take offense, but be frustrated with it. But the fact of the matter is, where Columbia was when Kyle Smith took over the team in 2010 versus where he left them in 2016 is... and maybe they need another coach to take them to that next level. I've liked what I've seen from Engel so far, but I think you have to give Kyle Smith a lot of credit for where he brought the program over 6 years.
Yeah, I agree that I agree with Kevin that you know, sweeping the rest of the conference last year, that's hard to do. You know, but regardless of how good you are, certainly you can look at you know, Princeton and last year alone and how hard that is to do, or Yale at Dartmouth, etc. Yeah, I mean, I never got the sense that. I mean, the front court was always kind of disappointing, but that never seemed to get worked out quite so much. The Longwood loss was kind of a head scratcher, but once they got down to it, I mean, you know, the Princeton games were toss ups, especially the one at Levian, and you know, I never got the sense that you know, wow, this is a team that is really just not getting it up to snuff at all. But I agree with the main thrust of your point there, Richard, that, you know, Jim Engels is a fantastic coach, and that, you know, this is, and to echo Kevin, that, you know, the pacing, a bit of a faster pace, suits this roster, which is much different than the rosters that we've seen from Columbia in the last couple of seasons. So, you know, it's a different roster, it's a different psyche, it's a different coach, and, you know, best of both worlds type of perspective for Columbia now.
Not to beat a dead lion, but when you analyze the game at Levian last year, I mean, Columbia had, what, a 7-point lead with a couple minutes to go and an 8-point lead in regulation, or maybe flip those two. I really think that was a game that they threw away.
I don't put it on the coach, though. I mean, you know,
some of it was on the coach. They should have fouled up three, but you know, you let Devin Candy get that shot off at the end of the game, but which I'm still boils my blood to this day. you know, I think there's relitigating Kyle Smith's career is always going to be difficult. But I think this year's team had a very difficult December, and I think that they have the takeaway from the Cornell game is they found a way to win a tight game. They found a way to get their best player involved, and you know, I think they've sort of settled on an identity on defense, which was the big problem for the start of the year. So it'll be really interesting so we have the reverse leg against Cornell, which is at Levian this weekend. I received an email from Columbia that noted, among other things, that both teams will be wearing their color uniforms. I'd be interested in knowing how often that happens in the Ivy League. So Columbia will be in blue and Cornell will be in red. You know, these are the sorts of things. It's a game Columbia, if they want to be in the seriously considered for the fourth seed, they need to win this game. Cornell likely to be a bottom feeder this season. It's a big weekend for the Lions, and they have the advantage of something that, if we're talking about schedule quirks, something that always bothered me was occasionally Columbia would have this Cornell weekend before the students got back. And it's frustrating when you're trying to build momentum for the season ahead. Columbia's attendance last year in particular was, you know, they were selling out almost every night in Levian. to have this first home game be coming off of a win with all the students back should be rocking in Morningside Heights.
I haven't. Let me just ask a question. If anybody knows the status of Robert Hatter, he suffered what looked to be a pretty severe knee injury against Columbia last week. I don't know if he's going to be at full strength, and if he's not, that's going to be a very difficult battle for Cornell to maintain on the road in New York.
Yeah, I personally don't know what his what the latest status on is. I did see that, and you know, I just have fingers crossed for him. Well, we'll find out soon enough, I suppose, unless anyone has better intel on that.
I'm not sure that we have that intel. You know, we would
don't
have
the intel.
We would have to have George go ask Robin Harris again. You know, she knows everything, and George is an intrepid reporter. So let's wrap up because as I've told the panel, I have places to be. We all have places to be. And so just a preview of the weekend, I'll ask everyone one final question, then we'll wrap up. So on Friday night, we've got the return leg of Yale Brown. That'll be at the Piz. And then on Saturday, three games. As we mentioned, the Lions hosting the Big Red in Levian. Harvard plays host to Dartmouth in the return leg of their game. I was about to say that the game's at 11 o'clock a.m., but then I remembered that I live in California, and so that's wrong. It is a 2 p.m. start. And then the Big Five, Penn, taking on St. Joe's in the Palestra. So this has sort of been my go-to question. If I want to go around the table, one thing that each of you is looking at this weekend as just something you're trying to keep an eye on. Let's start with Richard and work our way around.
I think having to play Brown on the road after, you know, the toughest weekend for Yale coming January 13 and 14 could present some problems in a number of respects. They were sky high for that weekend. You know, was some bravado knocked out of Yale against Princeton. Going to Brown, I think, after that weekend is far more difficult, and this goes to my point that I articulated earlier, than starting the season at Brown. So I would take a look closely at that game. Dyer will be back, so that's going to change a dimension for Yale, but I think the game might be a lot closer than people expect.
Kevin?
I'm just watching that Cornell-Columbia game. This is still probably the two teams that I haven't really figured out yet this year, so I don't really know what to make of. They're also two teams that just tend to play weird games in general. Going back a few years, this series has often come down to weird plays at the end of the games. It almost did up in Cornell last weekend. Cornell made a couple steals and had a chance to tie at the end of the game. So I think something interesting is going to happen in that one. I just don't know what it'll be.
George?
I'm hoping that Penn can handle St. Joe's at home. Now, obviously, it's not a league game, but St. Joe's is always a tough opponent. They were certainly tough for Princeton in Jadwin. But I'm thinking that Penn at home is going to try to regroup and probably will give a very good accounting of themselves. Princeton's off for 2 weeks, so I'm not really going to focus too much on basketball this week. I'm still basking in the fact that Mitch Henderson is 33-5 at home in his career in the Ivy League. We're so proud.
Let me just pipe in on one thing. Yale is now fourth in the country in longest winning streaks at home after Miami lost last night.
All right. Good way to brag to each other there. Well done. Mike, what are you looking at?
Well, first of all, got a question on Twitter. Who's for an Ivy basketball fantasy league, who would you rather keep for next year, Matt Morgan or Mia Oney? I would say Morgan, just because not because he's a better or worse player, but because I think his team is just more reliant on him. So there's your answer, John Garrison Marks. Thank you for the question. And I will say really quickly, I'm looking for, honestly, we already touched on it, but I'm looking for who is Penn going to roll out Saturday in, you know, what's their lineups going to be? I mean, what if, you know, I do think this, you know, the roster is worth trying to rejig a little bit at this point, and that is a winnable game, I think. So what's it, you know, what's it going to be? I mean, how, provided that Broder doesn't get into early foul trouble, you know, how do you work around him over the course of an entire game? You know, how do you maximize this backcourt? Now, maybe it's just as simple as somebody getting hot, but, you know, it's almost a little bit like hockey. You're trying to find what the right light line combination is going to be, and, you know, if you find it, then maybe you're golden. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think it's good to have these big five games coming up as tune-ups for this team to recover before that Harvard-Dartmouth weekend.
And I'll just say, I'm looking at Levian. I think the big question for Columbia is twofold, one of which is, can Petrasek sort of sustain this? You know, 30 points is a lot of points, obviously, coming off his, I believe, his first Player of the Week nod. But this has been kind of a pattern with Petrasek over the years. There might be one or two or three good games, and then he disappears or he suffers an injury. He missed almost an entire season with some sort of, I believe it was mono. So that's question number one. And then the second for Columbia is Nate Hickman, who has the potential to score a ton of points. I'm really curious to see how the two of them sort of work together. The sort of big three on offense for Columbia, Smith, Hickman, and Petrasek, if they can get that rolling, then the rest of the team can, you know, the rest of it falls into, I think, fairly defined roles of 3-and-D guys, front court bruisers, etc. But so keep working on getting those three guys to click. So that just about does it for this week's episode of On the Vine. This is our third episode of the year. We'll keep coming to you every week as we get into the meat of Ivy season. It's going to start heating up real fast, and soon, like a lobster slowly being boiled alive in cold water, we will be right in the thick of it. So thank you to everyone who listened to that terrible metaphor and to this entire program. And now I'll thank everyone for coming on the show. Kevin Whitaker, please, your Twitter account, and where can we find your weekly wrap-up?
Twitter account is WHITAKK, and weekly roundups at NYC Buckets usually comes out on Mondays in the morning.
Well, thanks very much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you very much to Richard Kent for appearing, his first appearance on the Vine. Do you think it went well, Richard?
I enjoyed it very much, and I'm doing a book right now on the history of Yale basketball, and I'm going to include a little segment about On the Vine.
Oh, that would be truly wow. The honor. That would be the honor of my my adult life, which admittedly has not been very long so far. So thank you very much, Richard, for coming on the program. Thank you very much to George Clark, as always, for coming on.
You're very welcome. Richard, I'm looking forward to your book. And Kevin, I really look forward every week to your Ivy League wrap-up. Very well done and very informative.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear it.
And thank you very much to the president-elect of IvyHoopsOnline.com, Mike Tony. Thank you, as always, for your wisdom and leadership. And we'll see you next week. Right, buddy?
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed the peaceful transfer of power for the 4 seed from us to you.
So is it you guys get the presidency and we get the 4 seed? Is that how this works? Because
yep,
I think currently there's a Columbia graduate in the White House. So
currently, emphasis on currently. Yes.
Well,
guys, I was confused by the attendance at the Yale-Princeton game. It was really appalling to me. I guess students weren't there, but I thought that building would be rocking with about 4,500 people.
Richard, I agree with your disappointment. I can't account for it. The night before, the weather was a factor, but it was a shame that Ivy League basketball is not drawing fans the way it used to.
We could have a whole podcast on just that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know really who would listen, and that's the real question. All right, thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for coming on the show. I've been Peter Andrews. Make sure to follow us on ivyhoopsonline.com. We'll be back next week, probably around the same time. Thanks very much. Have a great weekend.